Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the content of our podcast, but you have additional short-term rental questions, we host a weekly live question session that you guys can join for free. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays. And if you head over to strquestions.com, you can sign up. So not only am I the host of this show, but I also own and manage my own properties, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about short-term rental investing. So please join us anytime for a free weekly live Q&A on Zoom. Sign up at strquestions.com. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today, I am very excited to have Jamie Lane from AirDNA on to talk about the way AirDNA is now, because we just had a big change. They rolled out a new interface, new pricing, all kinds of things. So he's here to answer all of our questions on that. How's it going today, Jamie?
Great. Good to see you, Avery. Thanks for having me. And it was great to meet you in person at STR Wealth. Like, that was a lot of fun.
Yes, I know. It was a little too quick. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Super happy to have you. So first, let's hear a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into the vacation rental business and AirDNA and everything.
Yeah. So going back to 2008, 2009, I was hosting on Couchsurfing way back in the day. Started hosting on Airbnb, just a private room in my own house in 2012. Around that same time, I started in the hospitality business. A company called PKF Hospitality Research, doing research analysis on the hotel industry. It was my job to forecast the future of the hotel industry as a economist. And as part of that, we started seeing the rise of Airbnb and short-term rentals start to make an impact on hotels. I became one of the first clients of AirDNA in 2015, essentially told Scott Shafford to give me your entire database. I want to digest it, incorporate it into our analysis, and started and just really loving diving into the short-term rental data, trying to see the trends that were happening, and decided to join the company in October of 2020, and have been there ever since, and currently serve as the chief economist and SVP of analytics.
All right. Those are a bunch of fancy words. I got a C in economics at University of Texas. So I'm going to do my best to interview you here. Okay. So for people who may not be familiar with AirDNA, which I can't imagine that anybody who's familiar enough with short-term rentals to be listening to this podcast would not be familiar, but let's just, for the sake of there may be a few out there, what is AirDNA? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so we are a short-term rental data and analytics company. Our goal is to track essentially every short-term rental around the world and what it's earning in terms of revenue. So how many nights is it getting booked? What rate is it getting booked at? What revenue is it earning? Have all the property attributes about those properties. So what? How many bedrooms, bathrooms, the location, the amenities, where it's located? And then provide that data in a way that's going to make it easy to find investments, underwrite investments, benchmark your own performance, price your property, all the ways that you'd want to use data to support your business and grow your business.
Okay. So there's a lot to be asked there. But first, I think let's talk about how we can use AirDNA as a new investor to determine what kind of property to buy. So I think let's start with the sourcing of the data. Is that all coming from Airbnb and Vrbo or from other data sources as well?
Yeah, so our primary form of data collection is through the OTAs. So we're looking at both Airbnb and Vrbo every day, looking at how much those properties are getting booked. But just because we're scraping data off the OTAs, that doesn't mean we're only getting bookings that come through the OTAs. So because we're monitoring the calendars and looking at what days you have available, when those go unavailable, we then model whether those are a book night or a blocked period. So like if it's, for example, if it's 2 weeks during the summer with a lead time of 2 months, And it's a property that we see actively getting booking with reviews and all that, our model is going to say like, hey, that's a reservation. If it's 6 months in Cape Cod in the winter that someone's blocking off, our model is going to say like, you know what, this isn't a reservation, this is a block. And those are really important. So do we get it exact of like, if you got a friend coming and staying in your place and they asked to stay there like 3 months beforehand during peak season for a week, like we're probably going to see that as a reservation. But in all reality, you probably would have gotten booked during that time anyway. So we do a lot of work to model whether things are booked or blocked. We then do a lot of testing to make sure that model's accurate. So for anyone that uses AirDNA and connects their iCal to us, we're then looking at all your actual reservations and using those to empower our algorithm. So the more people that connect to us, the better our data gets over time. And we're able to verify reservations and improve our model throughout that process. We've got a massive team. It's about 15 people now that work on our data science and data engineering teams, that their entire job is to make our data as accurate as possible. And having that data be as accurate as possible for Destin or Gatlinburg or Los Angeles, as much as Paris or Vietnam or really any country, any city around the world.
That sounds like a big job.
Yeah, I think it surprises people how big AirDNA is. They're now close to 200 employees of the company focused on the data and tools. And like I mentioned, our data engineering team have 15 people. And that is as big as some entire companies in our space, but entirely focused around just data quality. And it's such a big focus for the company, is making sure that data is as good as possible. But it's only as good as how you interpret it and how you can use it. So that sort of gets to the next step of like, all right, you're starting your investment journey. And like the first thing a lot of people do is, let's say they have an address that they want to invest in. Let's say they're working with a realtor, or they're just going through Zillow and they find a property. So they're going to come to us and sort of give us an address, and we're going to tell them based on algorithm what they think that what we think that's worth or what we think it could earn. And that, in my opinion, is like the first step. And then we want to get into evaluating those comps and how I like to teach it is actually find your own comps and build your own sort of underwriting for that property.
Yeah, we call that the enemy method here at the Short Term Shop. And I found, you know, while we're talking about the new rollout versus how the interface used to be, that the new rollout makes it easier to implement the enemy method while you're looking at this data, because you've got this map here, so you can zoom in on where the property is that you're planning to buy and look at the performance of the properties around you so that you can then pull them up. And I recommend people have a qualitative spreadsheet and a quantitative spreadsheet. So your quantitative spreadsheet will have all your data from AirDNA or whatever data service you're using. And then your qualitative spreadsheet will be what you personally are looking at and the differences in each of the properties around you versus your properties. So whether that's amenities, are your comps, your enemies using dynamic pricing? That's a big one for me, because if you look at a listing, and we all know that a lot of times the way you manage a property is going to contribute to its success as much as any attribute about the property. So two people who have the exact same property can do wildly different numbers. And a kind of quick hack that I use to know if they're really optimizing their management is if you look and there you have, you know, two prices for the entire year, the weekend price and the weekday price, you know, they're not using a pricing tool like Price Labs is my favorite. And so you can probably, you know, it's pretty, I would say 98% true that if they're not optimizing their pricing, they're not optimizing anything else, because that's really the most important thing. So I like with the new interface that it's easier. You've got the map there. You can just click the listings and pull them up on the OTAs and look and run that enemy method and look for those amenities or attributes about the property or management or photos, you know, all those things that contribute to the why the data says what it says. So I really like that about the new rollout.
Yeah. And that's, I actually watched a lot of your videos on sort of showing people the entity method and how to go about it and trying to build as much of that process into the product. So like, now we've got a property page that we've built out for every single property that brings in the list of amenities, that brings in the forward calendar. So you can see how that property is priced on any given night out into the future. You can see the amenities that that property has. If you want to click into the Airbnb or Vrbo page, like those links are still there. So you can click in over to the OTAs. But then also, as you said, working with the map, like now we've added like, it's now we have like 50 filters and you can apply those filters and then see which properties sort of show up on the map. So you can start in a sit, let's say you're going to Orlando and there's 40,000 listings in Orlando and now start applying all the filters. And we're just rolled out amenity filters. So you can filter down to just properties with a pool, just properties with a hot tub, just properties that allow pets, like, and we've got a list of all the filters, and then you can see which properties sort of meet that criteria. You can see them on the map. You can see them on the list. We don't just have the top revenue generating properties now. Now we give you the list of every single property in that market. So you can evaluate and find the own the comps that sort of meet the criteria for what you're looking to invest in and not have to either rely on our Rentalizer tool or rely on looking at just the top revenue generating properties. Because in reality, that's not what's going to be best for most people when they're underwriting their property.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that having the map there makes it really easy. And then having the list of all the properties also helps a lot. And really, especially just that one pool amenity, that can be a $50,000 difference in income. So being able to separate that out really does make a big difference. Okay. So let's kind of back up and start at the beginning. Like, I'm a new investor and I'm checking out a market. I'm not even going to use an example because I'm going to forget which city I'm naming. So I'm looking at a city. And the first thing that I'm going to see is that the market score, what does the market score mean? And how is that calculated? Because I notice, I guess I am going to use a city. So I've got the market that I'm most familiar with, the Smokies in Tennessee, open in another window while we're talking. So I have, you know, my examples to ask questions about. And I notice, you know, that's one of people's favorite markets to say, oh, that one's over. That one's over with. Don't buy in the Smokies anymore. But the market score on that is a 92%. So I would love to know kind of how that's calculated with you guys.
Yeah. So maybe I'll step back a little bit because we did create a new page and it's like one of my favorite pages. And it's sort of what you get to when you first come into AirDNA. And where before we sort of took everyone into Santa Monica as like a test example. And fun story around that, it was sort of a dig at Santa Monica since they sort of prosecuted our founder for operating short-term rentals in that market.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he wanted to always and forever make it free to be able to see what the opportunity was to invest in a property in Santa Monica.
Oh, I love operating out of spite.
But so now we sort of bring people in. And when you first come into AirDNA, you get to a list of markets.
Okay.
And that list is dynamic. And so you can sort it based on a market score. You can select the type of markets you want to see, like cities, mid-sized cities, large cities, coastal cities, mountain markets. You can apply filters of, so I want to see the best markets to invest in coastal markets where they have the highest occupancy for 3-bedroom entire home house listings. So like you can start to apply all these filters. And let's say I want to see cities like just between 500 listings and 1,000 listings. So you can apply all these filters, start to sort, and you can filter by like high investability, high demand scores. And I'm going to walk through all those scores. But you can sort of start to set your buy box around markets and then rank those markets against each other. And like we really wanted to get to market discoverability because that was a big part of the change of AirDNA around. We wanted to open up every market if you subscribe and not just pigeonhole you into the one market that you're looking to subscribe to. Because our customers were telling us, like, I'm not just looking in my backyard anymore. I'm not just looking at the market I used to vacation in when I was growing up. I want to cast a wide net in the types of markets I'd be willing to invest in. And this allows people to sort of start to rank and find those markets that might be best to invest in. So now to answer your question around Sevierville. So let's say I've gone in that market. I see it's got a great score of a 92. So as I'm going to break down that score, the highest weight go into that score is investability. And that's where we're looking at the earning potential in that market. So what is the annual average revenue that properties in that market are earning relative to the average home value in that market? So as just like a pure score of like, does this seem like a good place to invest in or not? That's investability. The next two most important ones are rental demand and revenue growth. Rental demand is essentially just occupancy. So how high is occupancy in that market? There is a component of growth in occupancy as well. And then revenue growth is entirely a momentum variable. It's what is the year-over-year change in RevPAR over the past year compared to the year prior? So is that market seeing growth in RevPAR? Is it seeing a decrease in RevPAR over the past year? The other two, seasonality, regulation, less so. Seasonality is just how seasonal is the market? What's the difference between peak RevPAR and minimum RevPAR in that market? So highly seasonal markets are going to get a lower score, and just showing that, and you're going to have big peaks and valleys of in terms of cash flow. And regulation, it's a complicated metric to sort of get to what we think overall regulation is in that market.
Okay, I have a question. Switching, because you mentioned highly seasonal markets, so that makes me think of beach markets, which they're always highly seasonal. Yep. So does the time of year, so if you're looking at RevPAR, which give us a quick definition of RevPAR for those who aren't familiar with that term.
Yeah, so RevPAR looks at the total earnings of a property over the past year compared to the total nights that someone made that unit available. So revenue divided by nights available gives you RevPAR for that property. So we're not looking, and that's total nights available. So we're not calculating it per room. We're talking about the average revenue you're going to make per night that you make that unit available.
Okay. And so across, we're looking at this little RevPAR box on this market score that we're looking at that helps determine that's the revenue per available rental across the entire market. Okay, got it. So my question is, so right now we are at the beginning of March. So we haven't hit spring break yet, which is a sort of peak time for coastal markets. And we certainly haven't hit summer yet, which is the peak time. So if I'm looking at RevPAR, say in a coastal market, is it going to look different if I look at it at different times of year? So right now we're in March. We haven't hit our stride yet in terms of occupancy. So is it going to look like we have a lower RevPAR year over year because we only are measuring this year, January to March, which is low season, whereas last year we've got the entire 12 months worth of data. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So all of these metrics on the overview page and how we calculate the market scores are all over a 12-month average. So that $223 average RevPAR for Sevierville is the over the past 12 months. So it's going to look from March 2023 to February 2024. So a full 12-month period to take into account both the peaks and the valleys in that market.
Okay, so we're not on a calendar year. We're on a trailing 12. Got it. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so we talked about what RevPAR is. So you mentioned amenities. So the way that the short-term rental asset class has matured and I think stabilized, like I think this is a good thing. Every asset class, every industry has this like big run up and it gets really, really fast and it gets really huge. And then it contracts a little bit and then it kind of stabilizes and everybody's acting like, oh my God, short-term rentals are over because we've stabilized just like every other industry on the planet. Yeah. And so now that we have stabilized, the amenities offered are a lot more important than they used to be. Like when I first started in 2015, you could slap something up and have a 50% cash on cash return. That is not real life. That is an early adopter thing. So nowadays, now that we are stabilized, now that we are an established asset class, the amenities thing is much more important. So can you kind of walk us through how to gauge when we're looking at a market and looking at different properties, what amenities are important in that market?
Yeah. So maybe I'll start stepping back because I did come from the hotel industry. And the hotel industry could be argued as is absolutely a bit more mature than the short-term rental industry, but there's so many parallels between the two industries. In a hotel, by design and by necessity of the brand, requires that you refresh that property every 5 to 10 years. So you've got to go in and you've got to change your lobby. You've got to relook at the amenities that you offer. You've got to refresh that property to make sure that you're continuing to be able to get your fair share of demand in that market. And each property sort of puts an amount that they earn in reserve. And on average, it's about 4%. I'd suggest higher for short-term rentals. And so that you're saving so that you can go in and reinvest in your property and make sure that you're able to continue to get your fair share in that market. And I'd argue that a lot of short-term rental investors just don't do that. And that's to their detriment. And so new operators and new hotels, you see it all the time, come in with new, fresh, shiny amenities, new, fresh design, and they're able to get more than their fair share of demand. So you see all these new properties coming in doing well. You see existing operators that aren't sort of adapting and refreshing their properties, seeing their properties really start to underperform the market. And that's part of the hospitality cycle. Like, people want to stay in the new, fresh design, well-designed, well-amenitized properties. And existing operators are going to have to get into that cycle of, I've got to refresh and reinvest in my property on a regular basis. So when looking at amenities, I like to start on the overview page because we give you the overview of amenities in that market and what percent of properties have those sort of key amenities. So like in Sevierville, you can see that 86% of properties have a hot tub. Like, I think it was back in maybe 2015, 16, hot tub was like a interesting new maybe amenity in that market, or one that could actually differentiate you. Now, and it's probably oversaid that, and that's table stakes for Sevierville. Like, you've got to do something new to differentiate yourself in that market. And we are going to be expanding that list. Like, if we've sort of adding in a whole bunch of new amenities, the amenity list is now filled out where you can go into a market. And like, if you're looking at overall occupancy in a market, you can now change the amenities and look at the performance of a market with and without that amenity and filter down to like, all right, I want to look at entire home, 3-bedroom or 4-bedroom. I want to look at properties that are maybe professionally managed or non-professionally managed, like control for a lot of things that we know sort of make a difference. And then once you've done that, like, click on and off the amenity and then see what the impact is of that amenity on performance on the market. And that's going to allow you to really gauge, like, all right, like, in like, let's say I want to add a hot tub. Like, all right, I see that in terms of occupancy, I'm going to get about a 3% boost in ADR. It's going to give me a $50 higher ADR. Like, $50 times 3%, like, that's $150. Like, multiply that over the entire period. Like, that's a big return on that amenity. And you can start to test what the ROI of those amenities are going to be. And the problem is, when we sort of do articles on like the impact of amenities, it's like at a national average, when the impact of each amenity is really going to be local. So, and that's why you've got to be able to go in, look at different markets, even look at submarkets and see what the impact of that amenity is.
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially how now there are adding bigger amenities is more common, like pickleball courts and saunas and stuff. So I think, you know, it's more than just pools and hot tubs now, and it's important to be able to track that.
Yep. And that's what we're going to be adding in a whole lot more amenities into the list. We're actually just going through with our product team last week of all of the stuff that we're scraping off of Airbnb in terms of the amenity list. And it's like, I think now they have like, because they add different options in different markets, and there's like 800 different amenities that someone could add into their property depending on the market that we're in. So we're going through and like figuring out all those things in the list and what we want to add in. So there's going to be a whole lot coming in. It was funny, our developers like, just so you know, the list is limited to 64. I'm like, Okay, we can work with that in terms of number of amenities that we can add in to filter off of.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some things that, like you said, like hot tubs, but even at a smaller level that are really, really common in some markets that should not even be listed as an amenity, like air conditioning in Florida. So everything is going to have air conditioning in Florida. We don't need to filter by that. But, yep. You know, if you're buying something in Maine, not everything has air conditioning or, you know, out west. So
or if you're in Portugal or France or in Europe, like it's not that common to actually have AC. And if you're investing in a unit and thinking about adding an AC, like that is the number one amenity Americans look for when they're traveling overseas. And not a lot of properties have it, and it can make a huge difference in earning potential.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I wasn't even thinking in terms of globally. So I totally, totally agree with that. So the next question that I have, and maybe this is me, maybe it's on here and it's me not being able to figure it out. Is there a way, or are you guys working on a way to be able to see what percentage of the market each bedroom count takes up? That was a completely stupid way to word that. Hopefully you.
Yeah. So there is a way to see it. So something that I don't like, and I'm probably the biggest critic of AirDNA, and internally, I think the product team like loves/hates me because I'm just always like criticizing how we sort of have and display things. But you can go, it's under the occupancy charts, and we've sort of organized the charts in a way where it like asks a question and asks the question that you might be asking and want to get the data for. So if you click on the question, how many bedrooms did listings have, which is a weird question, you actually get the breakdown and you can expand it back multiple years of seeing what is the breakdown of bedroom counts in that market and how that's actually changed over time. You can now export that data so you can get the full time series and like, how has the number of 3 bedrooms or 4 bedrooms or 5 bedrooms or 6+ bedrooms sort of increased or decreased in my market? And then the filters fully apply to that. So you could filter to multifamily. So apartment, condo, lofts, you could filter to just entire homes, house, villas. Like you can play with the filters and sort of dig into that. Or let's say you want to apply the filter for pools and you see what are the size homes that have a pool and how has that changed over time?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Now I'm playing with it because I didn't see the drop down where the questions are. Okay. Cause I think that's very important because some people they'll have a huge budget. Like, hey, I've got a 1031. I want to spend $2 million. Yep. And you know, maybe it costs about $2 million to get a 5-bedroom property, which is great. You know, something like that could gross depending on amenities, depending on a number of things, $200,000. But what I've noticed in almost every market, and I have not seen it not work yet, but I am sure there's a market that it doesn't work. So y'all don't come for me. I know, but 1-bedrooms and studios are almost always less than 1% of the makeup of a market's bedroom count. And in some cases, you might be better off if you've got that $2 million budget buying a bunch of little ones, which, you know, you're going to have some extra costs, like, you know, X amount of closing costs over and over instead of just one set for one big property, and efficiency of management. It's easier to manage 1 than 10, but in terms of the actual cash flow and return on investment, you might be better off buying several small ones. And I think that that's really cool. We've got a good friend of mine who has been a client since the beginning. So almost 10 years now, he's got plenty of money. He can buy whatever he wants. He will not buy anything bigger than a 2-bedroom. He's got like 60 units in mountain markets and in beach markets, and 1-bedrooms are like his thing. He will not go bigger than that. And I think that's important to be able to see because bigger can be better, but it isn't always. And in the world of, oh my God, everything's saturated. And I've heard it said out there, I did not coin this phrase. I didn't come up with it. I don't know who did, but it's not necessarily markets that get saturated so much as bedroom counts within those markets. Yep. And that 0 and 1 bedroom number is almost never saturated because it's always less than 1% in the number of markets that I've looked in. I personally own a studio, and it crushes it and I love it and I will never sell it, even though it's got, you know, it's quadrupled in value. It's just the cash flow is too good on it because there's not many.
Yep.
Did you know that we're officially back in a buyer's market? That's right. Even though interest rates continue to rise, they are causing prices to fall. So there's finally room for you to do regular real estate investor things that we couldn't do for so long, like gasp, negotiate, make lower offers, ask for sellers to cover some of your closing costs. So it's a really great time to buy in terms of being able to get a lower purchase price and being able to negotiate. So if you're looking for your first or next short-term rental, it's a perfect time to reach out to us at The Short-Term Shop. Let our team of agents in any of our true vacation market destinations help you find the perfect investment. Jump on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected to get started. We are brokered by eXp Realty. See y'all over there.
If you want to buy a short-term rental in one of the best vacation markets in America, you're looking for The Short-Term Shop. They are the experts in the vacation rental space. Their team of realtors are fantastic. And if you use the Short-Term Shop to buy your home, you'll have access to free classes with me to teach you how to get your property up and running. Join us at theshorttermshop.com, brokered by eXp.
And I have sort of two comments on that. One, when you look on average and across just about every market this holds, smaller units generate higher occupancy.
Like
you just, and it's much more and attractive to shorter stays. It's more attractive to couples. You can just pack in guests and figure out more time periods that they want to stay. They have shorter lead times. You can sort of play with discounts. Like you can pack those in. The other thing though is you're competing with hotels when you have a studio and one bedroom. Like, you can't get around that. You're in a market with very little hotel inventory, that can be a great thing because people maybe go to book a hotel, they can't find one, then go to Airbnb and they're mm-hmm. going to find your property. If you're in a market with a big hotel inventory, that can make it where you just have to be that much higher on your game because you've got to compete with professionals in that market.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And sometimes I forget about that because we only do vacation markets. So I only buy short terms in vacation markets. A short term shop only operates in vacation markets with a couple exceptions. So, and that friend that I mentioned that has 60 only in vacation markets, because you don't want to be a competitor to a hotel. And I have gotten screamed at in my own Facebook group over this before, but if I'm going to a conference in a metro area and I don't have the kids, I am going to hotel and I'm getting room service and I want to be waited on. If I'm going on vacation somewhere with my kids, we're going skiing, we're going to the beach, we're going wherever, we're going to get a vacation rental because the kids are little. You got to have all kinds of snacks. You got to have yogurt and, you know, all the everything that you need a kitchen for. I'm sure as hell I'm not going to cook on vacation, but I still need a kitchen for all these things. So that's a really good call out. If you're a metro market investor, maybe don't take that advice that I just gave you. But in vacation markets where there's not a lot of hotel presence, it can be. I'm actually about to buy one over here on 30A. A one bedroom. So it can work really well. But anyway, that was a really long tangent on just how to look to see which number, which bedroom count might have the least amount of properties available.
The other point I'd like to make is around price tier, because I think this is another thing when someone's coming up with their investment strategy of like, am I going in on the higher end or am I going in on the lower end? And a lot of that has to do with and the price point that I'm going to be competing at within that market. And just like on studios, I earn higher occupancies than two or three bedrooms. And you actually see it start to go up again with some of the higher unit counts. On the budget and economy side of the price point, earn significantly higher occupancies than the higher end luxury type properties. So if you're maybe want to push towards, and I want to fill this unit and I want to fill it in the market that I'm in, like going after the more budget conscious traveler will allow you to make sure you're getting higher occupancy supports opposed to on the luxury end. Like you're definitely earning a higher ADR, but the number of travelers that can afford that price point is going to be smaller.
And I think that that's also really important. So we're talking a lot about data here, but data is half of the picture. The other half is the qualitative side of understanding your market. So you have to know what the tourists or travelers in your market expect and want in order to effectively run a short-term rental business. So I talked about this at our speech at the Short-Term Rental Wealth Conference a few weeks ago. So if you heard this, sorry, I'm going to repeat it. But one of the biggest mistakes that I see people make, and because I live in the Florida Panhandle, I consistently see them make this mistake in the areas of the Panhandle where there are bays. So that's Navarre Beach, that's Fort Walton, Destin, over here in Santa Rosa Beach, and then also Panama City, where, you know, maybe they're not familiar with this market. Maybe they're not from the Southeast. So this isn't the beach that their families went to growing up. And they'll see on either a management company or a data company's like best places to invest. We'll go Navarre, Florida. Mm-hmm. And what they'll do is they'll say, okay, Navarre. And they don't really learn anything about the market. They just go and they use the data to find, you know, the number of bedrooms that they want that does well, about how much they can expect to make on a property. And then they just go find, let's say it's a 4-bedroom. They just go find the cheapest 4-bedroom. And where they make big mistakes is they will buy on the wrong side of the bay. They'll buy on the north side of the bay and they'll say, well, it's water. They'll come to us. They do not buy with us if they're buying on the north side of the bay, because we would not let them do that, disclaimer. But I've had several people come to me over the years and say, hey, I'm not making any money in Navarre, because that's on like every list of best places to invest. Can you look at my listing? And I'm like, well, you bought on the bay. And they're like, well, some people will come to the bay. And I'm like, but they don't. You didn't take the time to understand the market. Just because it's water doesn't mean it's the water that people are coming to stay on. They want to stay on the Gulf side where it's clear, where it looks like the Caribbean. And then the next question or the next objection that I usually get when I say, well, people don't really go, they don't really vacation to the bay, they vacation to the Gulf. And they say, oh, well, it's just a 15-minute drive. People will be more willing to pay less and drive the 15 minutes to get to the Gulf. And then I have to explain to them, well, have you ever come here and tried to drive across that bridge to Navarre Beach during the high season? It takes 3 hours to get 3 miles. And people will stay, like my mom, for example, who I think has a sun disorder. She is like a sun goddess. She just wants to be on the beach in the sun basically for the rest of her life. She will stay in a port-a-john on the Gulf before she will drive the 15 minutes staying on the bay. And there's a lot of people like that. So you always have to take the data as a data point and marry that with understanding what the tourists in your market are coming for, because you can really get yourself in trouble if you just go, okay, highest income, lowest purchase price, put those together, that's what I'm buying. You can get yourself in trouble.
Yeah. And one of my, not to sort of take it back to the product again, but one of my favorite things now is like when you go in and zoom into a market, like on the map, like at some point it turns from dots to actually little pills with the last 12 months earnings for those properties. Mm-hmm. And then you can filter, like, I want to see just ones that were available like over 270 days so you can get to full-time properties. And so now you can visually see, and let's say I want to filter to like 3 bedrooms or 4 bedrooms. Now see like, all right, I can visually get a sense of like, all right, in this area, they're earning like, let's say on average, like 80 grand. And then I go over to this other area, maybe on the beach, they're averaging like 150 grand and like visually start to see that of like, what are the differences? Because it can be like one street over or like a pocket of like, yeah, those are earning more. Every single one of those properties has a great view overlooking the mountain. Like if you're down in the valley, like proximity, like they look really close. Like in our submarkets, they're in the exact same market. Like our rentalizer tool isn't going to know to be able to differentiate between one on the peak and one in the valley, because like they're right next to each other. But you can visually go in and see that and like choose like, okay, these are the properties that are actually good comps for me to use, and those are not. So I've got to exclude those, because like the calculators like are great for like a first cut. But then you've got to actually go in and look, okay, where is this property located? Is it relevant to my subject property that I'm looking at? And then, as you said, like the amenity method of like going in and like, what are the amenities? Are they revenue managing? Are they doing all these other things that really impact revenue.
Well, since you did it, I'm going to take that opportunity to swing that back to my product, is that's why you need a really, really good local agent who understands, yes, these properties are 2 miles apart or less, half a mile apart. But the reason these make a lot more money than these is because this one's up the mountain with a view. This one's down in the valley and doesn't have one, or, you know, down like in the holler, as we call it in East Tennessee. And there can even be just things that people don't know that only somebody who lives in the area and works in the area will know. Like, there's a street in one of our markets that has some pretty properties on it that looks great on paper in proximity. All the things, all the boxes are checked. But what you don't realize until you go there is that the dump, the county dump, is at the end of that road, and it smells so bad, like overwhelming, not just like a, what's that smell? Like, you cannot eat your breakfast with all the doors shut in the morning because it smells so bad. So you really do have to have a local expert who is driving past these properties every day to really give you an idea of, okay, you have this data. That's great. How can we give you our expertise to kind of help you then take what you found with that data and buy the right thing in our market?
Right. Because you guys are looking at the data. All the realtors are looking at the data. You guys know how to interpret the data. You guys know, like, oh yeah, like, you looked at this. Like, this is one thing we're doing now is we have every for sale property now available on our site. Like, we've got access to the MLS so we can show the properties. We can run each property through Rentalizer so you can get that sort of first cut. But then, like, all right, here are the comps that AirDNA is using. Like, take them to you. Like, then which one should I actually be using? Which one of these are good? Which one of these are bad? Like, actually help take that underwriting to the next step. Like, I'm a big proponent of, like, doing Rentalize first, then going through and, like, doing your own filters, your own search. Like, start with the map, filter down, find the properties, come up with your own list, and then talk through those with a local expert and get a sense of what are they going to be able to tell you in good, bad versus the comps you came up with, and really start to dial in with on what you think you would be able to earn for that property. It's not a 1 minute step to underwrite a property. I actually did a survey on my Twitter the other day of asking people how long they spent on underwriting. And like 25% of people said like 1 minute.
Oh,
and then
God,
like half the people said like more than 24 hours. So it was like, it was such
no
a
in
big
between.
Range. And like, yeah, there was like, on average, it was like an hour or two. But I mean, it really isn't a 1 minute calculator to underwrite a property. You've got to dig into the comps. You've got to dig in to the amenities. And like, I can't overemphasize it enough that you've got to do the homework on the performance. And like, what we're trying to do is give you everything, or at least on the data side, everything you need to do that research.
Yes. I have several questions on that, but one point I want to make first, and using an agent who is very, very experienced in the market, like has been there a long time, can also help. Because, for example, we have a few past clients that have backgrounds in corporate hotel revenue management, and their properties are outliers in terms of how much money they make. They make a ton of money. And you, or I even, are like, any person is probably never going to do as well as that person. So we can point that kind of stuff out when you're showing us, you know, the comps that you're using. We can say, oh, you know, that's him. That's not real life. He's crazy. He's able to do things that us mere mortals cannot. So,
but maybe you can make an introduction, get him to start units for us.
right. Okay. So back to the comp set. So when you're looking at the comp sets on AirDNA. So I typically, you know, I've been playing around on this, you know, since you came out with it. I guess it was about 4 or 5 months ago now. When you're looking at potential properties or properties that are already listed, so these are not the for sale properties. These are the properties that are for rent on the OTAs.
Yep.
It will tell you what their revenue is and what their potential revenue is. Yep. What is that delta and how is that calculated? What does that mean?
Yeah. So the delta is purely from the nights that we have modeled as blocked.
Okay.
What do we think that property would have earned if they would have made those available? So we're going to be taking average occupancy, average ADR for those properties, and then what we see from the market, and then essentially apply that to those block times. So if you're like, we're available, and you'll only see the difference where the number of days available is less than 365. So if a property was available for 365 days, the revenue potential and revenue earned are going to be exactly the same. If you blocked it off for a month because you had a friend coming, and so you'll see days available at 335 days, and then you'll see what we would have, the difference is what we would have estimated that property would have earned when it was blocked.
Okay. All right. That is not even something that was on my radar as what the delta would have been. So I'm glad I asked that question.
Yeah. Essentially trying to make all the numbers that are feeding into the rentalizer estimate, like full calendar year data, our full trailing 12 month data, full 12 months of operating history, even if that property didn't have 12 months of operating history.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. And last question. So you guys have had a significant drop in monthly cost for people to use your product. So do you want to tell everyone what that is? Because I know I was paying several $100, maybe $1,000 a month before. But what is it? You know, if I'm just somebody who's just getting started and want to start buying some short-term rentals and want to get some data, what's the cost for that monthly?
Yeah, so you're right. So our price model before, if people remember, it was like $100 a month and you would subscribe to a single city. Or some of the smaller cities were like $50 a month or $39.95, but you were paying per city, or maybe you would and pay a lot and get access to a state or an entire country. Now we've sort of done away with the per market, per state, per country pricing, and essentially made everything global access available for a low price. So the sort of three options are free. And you get some sort of high level market level data, basic, which is $15 a month, or pro, which I think right now is about $30 a month. And with that, you get access to every single city in the world. So you can click through on different countries and you get sort of full access to the data, for that market. So what we saw was, and why we made the change was, people generally subscribe for a month when they were looking to buy, but then wouldn't stick around because it was too expensive and we didn't provide enough ongoing value for them to stick around. So what we wanted to do was lower the price and then provide more data or value. So let's say you're paying $30 a month now, and it is an annual subscription now. So you got to sort of commit for the year. But what we wanted to show in terms of value is like, all right, you can set your comp set and now track your how your property's pacing, how your comp set's pacing, how your market's pacing, how your sub-market's pacing. So how bookings are going out in the future. Like there's this whole My Listing section. We provide sort of a free competitive or free with the subscription pricing tool. So we'll price your unit out. And at this point, I'm not suggesting you drop Price Labs, but maybe use it as a additional check of like, how would AirDNA price my unit on this given night? Like, how does pacing look like for this market? And we do combine both Airbnb and Vrbo properties into a complete view of how a market's pacing, where like Price Labs beyond all the others, like they're essentially like each channel. So you got to see like, okay, here's how properties on Airbnb are pacing. Here's how properties on Vrbo are pacing. So you've got this complete view of here's the number of properties available. Here's what's booked. Here's how much should get booked. And so you can really get a good forward view and help sort of inform your revenue management strategy going forward.
Awesome. So the last question that I'm going to ask, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but for the longest time, AirDNA was the only data company in existence. You guys had a complete monopoly on data and short-term rentals. So over the past couple of years, a few competitors have popped up. So what do you feel sets AirDNA apart from those competitors?
Yeah. So one is the sort of complete focus on accuracy and historical data. So we started in 2015. We now have a long time series of data. And we've got a large team sort of focused on making that data as accurate as possible. And like this, I may get in trouble for talking about this, but I just want to sort of throw it out there. 2023 okay. will go down in the year as peak data accuracy for the industry. So Airbnb and Vrbo have both made significant changes on their websites that make it like 10 times harder to get access to the data that we were getting. So companies like us, Price Labs, like maybe a couple others have the scale to be able in the sort of money to be able to keep getting data. But like, for example, our scrapes, our number of scrapes we do to per day has gone from about 10 million per day to 45 million. Like we've had to scale this massively. Like some of the other competitors in the space have had to increase their cost like by seven figures in terms of to be able to continue to get the same quality of data that we're getting. So the ability for other companies to sort of spin up competing products is just like after October 24th, like 2023, when a lot of those changes were made, like it has become significantly harder. And so I think you'll see a lot of these companies that were competitors go away, and it's going to be only the groups that can continue to invest in the data and the personnel and the sort of proxies, the scrapes to be able to continue to acquire the data going forward. So there's been some big changes happening and we've all had to adjust. We think, and like our data quality is going to be just as good. And we think it's actually going to continue to get better, but it's only because of massive investment. And we've talked with a few of the other companies and they're able to do that sort of investment to continue the data quality, but not everyone will.
All right. Yeah. I had read that they're making it more difficult to scrape. So,
yep. So the big change was we used to be able to do one scrape and get the entire array of like price 365 days out into the future. Now we've got to do what we call itinerary-based scraping. So we've got to go in and like sample each sort of day. Like we're going to do a 1 day stay here, a 2 day stay here, a week long stay here, and sort of piece together the entire calendar. And we've got to do that for every single listing. So there's 7 million active listings on Airbnb. A fun fact is only 50% have more than 4 rates out into the future. So as you said, there's a whole lot of people that don't do dynamic pricing. Like it's like 50% of the competitors don't. So that have less, and you think about 4 lakes rates, that's like peak season, off season, weekday, weekend. Like that's not a lot of rate variability. And over half the inventory has less than that. So yeah, it's a lot of changes happening and make it exciting and give us something to do every day.
Well, that's a great answer. And I'm interested to hear that data that less than 50% are using dynamic pricing, because when people are out there, you know, on Facebook groups calling like entire states and an entire asset class saturated, but half the inventory is still not even using that very basic, what I think the most important thing to optimize is your pricing. We know they're not managing anything else well either if they're not doing that. So that's 50% of the market that you're not even competing with. That like I would not consider someone who's not using dynamic pricing a competitor, because they're leaving money, tons of money on the table. I mean, I think our income went up 20% when we started using Price Labs. So,
yep. And I think it's like 20% of properties out there only have one rate.
Oh my God. Did not know that. Well, thank you. Well, okay, Jamie. So we're coming to the last 3 questions of the show that we ask every guest. But first, is there anything that I didn't ask about AirDNA that you think our listeners would benefit from hearing about?
No, that you asked a bunch of great questions, and we've got a lot of stuff coming out, a lot of new features. But so keep updated, subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get sort of updates on all the new things being released.
All right. Cool. Okay. Last 3 questions. First one, what advice would you give 20-year-old Jamie?
Yeah. So the context is I'm an economist. I like think, write, like, and do analysis. But my thing I would have tell myself is to write more, like the power of repetition, like forming and supporting arguments and just like practicing that. Like I had such an aversion to writing when I was younger. But now I try to do it every day, and it just gets easier over time. And I just wish I would have started when I was 20, just make myself do it.
Okay. Have not had that answer before, but that's great. Okay. Next question. What advice would you give a new investor who wants to get into short-term rentals starting today?
Yeah. So I'm a big proponent of finding a community, and there's a community around investing. And there's so many, like, there's paid investor groups, like, and your interview with Sean Moore with Vodacy was a great one. Like, you got Rob Abasalo, Julie George, Bill Faith. There's like, I feel like there's like 20 or 30, like, and masterminds now, like, either pay to be part of one of those or sort of go to a meetup in your market, sort of find your own community in your market or find a Facebook group. There's so many groups that you can sort of learn from that can sort of put you on that right path. And answer your questions and really support your investment journey and find one of those or find multiple of them and they're going to pay dividends.
All right. And last question, what is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Yeah. So at the DARM conference, so it's a data and revenue management conference for short-term rentals. One of the keynote speakers was Will Grotter. And he wrote this book called Unreasonable Hospitality. So it's a relatively new book, but like it really changed my mindset on how I started thinking about hospitality, not just in like how I support my guests, like when they're staying in my short-term rentals, but like how to like incorporate hospitality in like everyday aspects of my life. And it's really changed my mindset. Like the difference between hospitality and service, like empowering employees. Like I love the examples that he gave, and like really taking the interests of your employees and letting them run with that and like how it can support different aspects of your business, like is great. So I'm a big fan of that book.
Yeah, that is a great one. And how can our listeners, if they want to follow you on social media, how can they find you?
Yeah. So I'm relatively active on Twitter, Jamie_Lane and LinkedIn. I've got a podcast called the STR Data Lab, where we do weekly discussions about data in the industry. And then you can find AirDNA at airdna.co.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Jamie.
Thank you, Avery.